Today is another Tuesday for us to have a discussion. Almost 1 hour we have. So I would like to invite Venerable Buddharakhita, if there are no other comments. If there are comments, please take the chance before going to this discussion, please. Yes, no comments. So we can start with the point where we stopped last time.
Okay, so I will continue on this 12th sutta in the chapter of octads, or chapter of eighths. And the Buddha says, he's continuing to answer the question, but why do they assert diverse truths, those proponents who claim to be skilled? Are those truths actually many and diverse, or do they follow a line of reasoning? So he gives a very, very long answer to this question. We dealt with a few verses of his answer, and I'll continue with the rest of his answer. He says, as he considers the opponent a fool, on the same grounds he describes himself as skilled. Of his own accord, claiming himself skillful, he disdains the other, yet speaks in the same way. Inflated by that extremist view, intoxicated with conceit, thinking himself perfect on his own accord, he has mentally anointed himself, for that view of his is taken up in such a manner. If one is deficient because of the opponent's word, the opponent himself is similarly deficient in wisdom. But if he is himself a master of knowledge, a wise man, then there is no fool among ascetics. So again, here the Buddha continues this this line, or this line of thought around how you deal with how, if you're a wise person, you are in a way not able to speak or to answer to a foolish person. You can't discuss or argue the point with them, or he says, in fact, it's a hallmark of people who don't really understand truth that they argue and discuss the points with each other, and that that it's just one person taking up a different extreme of, you know, of the argument. So I always find myself that a hallmark of ideology or people who are really ideologically driven is that they have an extreme view, and they fail to also understand the opposite. They cannot steel man their own arguments. They don't know what the opposition will say, and they they have black and white thinking. They see the world in simplistic terms. They oversimplify. They fail to see the complexity. They fail to see that that the world is not necessarily simple or straightforward. They'll say, oh, it's just this and it's just that, and they give these incredibly simple answers to world problems, and they don't consider carefully that world problems are probably very, very complicated. So but they are skillful. They have a certain skill in arguing their point, but it will have this characteristic of that they take an extremist view, and they're inflated by their extremist view and intoxicated with conceit, with self-aggrandizement, or I'm superior and you're inferior. My thinking is superior, your thinking is inferior, rather than just seeing that the other person's thinking is a different perspective, maybe on the same thing, or that as I said, they can't steel man their own arguments. They can't say, well, here is my arguments, and here's what my critic would say about my argument. And when they do hear the critic's argument, they fail to see that is a kind of another perspective maybe on around their argument, but that they both may not be in fact seeing the truth. So intoxicated with conceit, thinking himself perfect, on his own accord he mentally anoints himself. So yeah, this mentally anointing himself, like at the moment the queen just died, and so the king will be anointed. They will pour like olive oil or something on his head to make him a sacral king. So this is kind of like a baptism. This is a sort of a religious sort of purification or something like that. Like so this person feels like there's different levels of superiority, but then there's a kind of a spiritual and a kingly superiority over another person because you've been anointed. So for that view of his taken up in such a manner, he is inflated by that extremist view. And if one is deficient because of the opponent's word, the opponent himself is similarly deficient in wisdom. But if he is himself a master of knowledge, a wise man, there is no fool, then there is no fool amongst ascetics. So here again, we can optimize around the argument. So when somebody points out something and we can point out the flaw in that something, we really think we've sort of solved the whole problem. And, you know, we haven't. We've just kind of optimized. We've won a local battle but lost the war of around truth. So one has been a master, but only tactically, but not in the overall vision or doctrine of the truth. So if one is deficient because of the opponent's word, the opponent himself is similarly deficient in wisdom. So again, like we're just optimized around the local. We fail to see the global. We fail to, like I say, we might have think we have a cute little solution to the world problem, but the world problem isn't being fixed whatsoever. So he is a master, but if he is himself a master of knowledge, a wise man, then there is no fool among ascetics. So this really comes back to being a master of knowledge oneself, and that we... that this is the approach, you know, is true mastery of knowledge oneself. That it is not necessarily, you know, debate and like discussion can be lively and informative. Like that's why we have suttas. That's why the Buddha turned around and taught what he taught. That's why in this path we have that the Tathagata opens the path. He starts to turns the wheel of knowledge for us, the Dhammacakkappavattana. You know, but ultimately we have to have that self-enlightenment, and then there is no fool amongst ascetics. But just thinking you have sharp arguments and take extreme positions and so forth is not to be a master of knowledge, and is to be a fool amongst ascetics. So again, the Buddha is pointing back to the path itself as the only way, the true way of knowing knowledge, and that like these arguments and debates and discussions can be empty, of course. I mean, mostly are empty, but hopefully this morning's discussion is useful.
Yeah, the stanza now you are describing is in Pali. Parasachehi vachasa nihi no, parasachehi vachasa nihi no, tumo saha, hoti nihi na panyo. Atache sayang vedagu hoti dhiro, nako chibalo samanesu atti. This someone is negating others and look down. He is a look down person with something to be looked down. He is lowly class. If someone is master, if someone is fulfilled, he never looked down any other ascetic. But I was telling sometimes, because everyone is with their own direct touch, so nothing is inferior. Everyone is having their own direct touch, and therefore someone is not to pinpoint it with the sarcasm or with the hatred. As friends, we can tell. That is sure. But this sentence, Nakochi Balo, Samanesu Atti, there is no one inferior among mendicants. Everyone is equal. Everyone is serious. So that is only the Buddha is telling. All the other religious masters says, our religious sacred book is the book. Don't read others. And if you are going to read, it is not the following of the Buddhist idea. So therefore, conform to yourself. Conform to your sacred book. Conform to your moderator or the mentor. But in Buddhism, it says everyone is having some kind of truths. No one is inferior. At least the wrong view, having the others, showing the wrong examples or consequences, so you have nothing to do that experiment because you can see consequences what the wrong doing. So it's a great achievement. So we being in third world country, we have been taught in agriculture, please see what is happening in the advanced development. They are ruining the earth. They are exploiting the deep, heavy metals and going for quick method of touching by the button. Ultimately, it has to collapse. Not that we are advanced. As far as urea is concerned, we have been taught Jaffna is using so much of urea. It is going more than 0.3 of the parts per million. So it's called the urea bomb. It is not agriculture. And that happened to the wheat belt in America. Soil is just a dust bowl. No wheat. Because so much also, we are, at that time, we are about to go for urea because it was giving so much of a crop. But urea itself is not enough. You have to have all NPK that is available only in compost. So we give up compost and go for chemical fertilizer and we got 242 or something like that bushels per acre in Mahavali areas because it's a virgin land. Now it is not the case. Of course, the all investment recovered. All loan recovered because 2-3 seasons time we got it. But now it's a hell of a salinity. Too much of salinity. What to do? So likewise they are in cycles. So therefore when someone is doing wrong thing, if you can really study deep, then you can understand the consequences. If someone is doing good thing, you can see results. You must not do the experiment, but you must share with them. So that is what we are being lucky regarding the health sector. We have been lucky in the agricultural commercialized sector because we have not gone because still we have Ayurveda. Another method, Indian method and the Chinese method. And over there, no doctor is using allopathic. They are using Indian medicine and the Chinese medicine. They are writing prescription for the pharmaceutical. And agriculture, that's intensive agriculture. I did 6 years of job in the intensive agriculture. And it is not the main reason for me to quit. I was never handling the pesticide side. There are four people from morning to evening with the mask, the high pressure gun and spraying. So I go into the room and wait because I feel the swelling in my throat. But ultimately they are emptying their whole chemical body. Whatever the insurance we are going to give. One boy was cleaning the table before the breakfast. We start job before the breakfast. It was nemaka. It's a deadly poisonous. And he's been not to ask to eat anything because of the hand. It's poisonous. So a friend came. What about string hopper? He says, no, my hand is with the chemicals. So ultimately, he took with the two fingers, put one thing in the mouth, start vomiting. Go to the hospital, they found our company is giving such a... That chemical is not possible to import unless otherwise we have special permission. The ships are only taking. Planes are not happy to take it because it's burst. The whole the crowd is burned. Ultimately, went into the court. Because such a detrimental. And if you are killing animals, why not we?
we have also been supposed to kill. So we have to go moderate. So therefore, that bad experiment, doing war, is a good lesson for us. The environment is polluted. And so much of carbon problem. But when they are fighting, how much the budget for weapons? We don't have money. We don't have money for the three meals. So this kind of good and bad, no harm. But you must not look down. Tell him, because they are giving such a classic example. And still the American president think it is by AI, information technology, they can be saved. The present problem will be saved by artificial intelligence. Wait and see. So therefore, both the sides, if you look from the critical point of view, no one is inferior. They are giving a classic example. They succumb to the situation. We also will succumb after a while, not immediately, because the world is a system. So therefore, Buddha mentioned, don't look down. And the main problem is not we are looking down the other religious people. We are critical about the Buddhist teachers. That's the worst thing today. Each and every student is hating the teacher. Very common, just like the children hating the parents. It become a fashionable. So I am so happy about my early teachers. They told it is not a mistake of your teachers. That the way you handle it, the way you are lucky or unlucky, understand this is suffering. And not among the Theravada Mahayana, but among the Siyama Nikaya, Ramanya Nikaya, and Amarapura Nikaya, fighting. Never negotiate. We can negotiate with Tamil terrorist. Never among the Nikayas. So that is the way, because we always inferior. We being forest monks, given up a pedestal and whitewashing throughout. Telling don't go to the village, don't go to the village monks, and because they are inferior. But they have so much of human qualities. Through Satipatthana only I came to know the 8 acres offered in Aswatha, and the village monk also being invited, he came. He told that this gentleman wants to offer his dowry to the sasana, and he selected the monastery. Forest monastery, I was happy. Because if it is given to the village, they are misusing. And later I heard it is through Nisarnavani. So I came to see the Nisarnavani monk. I just wanted to see your face with my full blessings. And the last time, Poya day, he invited our monks to go there and have a Satipatthana. You see, they have such a broad-minded, because they are, he's a lecturer in the university. He is not looking down at the forest monks, as our teachers told us. They are appreciating. Unless otherwise we go and stretch the hand, there won't be any kind of this. This is within Theravada. This is within Nikayas. And if it is going, if 5 monks get together, enough. That's what happened to the Japan. Everyone is hitting them. They went introvert and they became a big economy. So Anagarika Dharmapala is a great feature in Sri Lanka. And he told, I don't have 5 monks. So I will go to India. Don't even bring my ash to Sri Lanka, because Sri Lankans are so they have no appreciation. They have no sympathetic joy. I gave up everything. But still they find faults. So one of the very senior monk in Colombo told, I just wanted to come to Nisarnavani to meet you. Please, Dhammajiva, unite monks. They are kings. They have so much of abilities. They have so much of good qualities. But they are fighting. For a small, tiny part. So therefore, don't undermine, whatever it may be, forest monks or village monks or Siyama Nikaya, Ramanya Nikaya, you are doing Samatha, you are doing Vipassana, you are doing Margapala Jnana, no harm. So that equality. This is the first time I read this in Pali, Nakochi Balo Samanesu Atti. It says, Sramanyankere Balo Kishvek Natteya. If someone renounced, we have to treat everyone as an arahant. They may be doing juggleries and doing all the kind of business, but they are monks. So we had the MP together, the Jnanas here. Ultimately, he went to the politics also. He says, if someone is doing wrong things, Sarvodaya leader, Ari Ratna, Mr. Kamman says, Bhante, you see, your people are doing so much of bad. He says, can't help, he is in our company. We are in the same company. Any priest, any person claimed to be a priest is not a fool. So when you go to the interfaith, I listen to their talks, well organized, good grammar, talking very nicely. And we consider they are Michaditi. We consider them as wrong view. But our fellows talking nonsense. Still, I am not inferior, looking inferior. I am going there. I don't think it's a wastage of time. Because each and every ascetic, each and every mendicant is nothing to be looked down. I don't know how Bhikkhu Bodhi is translating it. Can you please, Bhante, read how Bhikkhu Bodhi is translating?
He says,
then there is no fool among ascetics.
Yes.
Everyone is something to be appreciated because they have renounced. I think 70% Kiles has gone by now. Out of the 30 balance, they can make a hell, no problem. But 70%, the biggest part gone, but they are not appreciating it. When the people come to the retreat, I say, just mind you have given up the household. You have given up the family and kind of, that you have 70%, you get the credit pass or distinction pass. In Sri Lanka, distinction means 70% mark. Balance 30%. But I just came in here with the 30% marks, just a simple pass. So I am so happy. So therefore, if we mendicants, if we can give a message to the world, that's a UN environmental, this thing is telling, the faith, mindfulness and the prayer, they are comprising 78% of the world population. It's basically run by Muslims. The Iliad. And when I am talking mindfulness, he gives the superior mindfulness. I am just giving a mindfulness 8 minutes session. And they are talking. Then I tell, I have no responsibilities because now I thought it is my duty to teach mindfulness. No, Muslim people, Catholic, Hindu, all are talking about mindfulness. So that is the way we have to have certain amount of open window for the other views, other ascetics. That is making samajivikata, how do you call the communist or no, the socialist idea. Everyone is equal, like, not about the people, I am talking about the ascetics. So this is the way it is translated. This is the first time I read it in the Pali Canon, but otherwise I say everyone born enlightened, they don't know. We are catalyzing your good part. And then you understand becoming a human is not a simple joke. You're becoming ascetic, pabbaja, not a joke. So that's all I have to say, Bhante. Anyone from the other ascetics, other heretics, other mendicants, other mad people?
Vasarai Bhante, thank you, everyone who has spoken. Thank you for the great comments. And silence is very powerful, and it's as Bhante here was mentioning earlier, people debate each other and they think that they're correct, but a wise person knows that this is just a common trait or characteristic of most people, is to debate and try to prove that they're right, and they have this idea that I have to prove that I'm right, whereas a wise person knows, again, as I've said before, a wise person knows that I am on the right path, and I don't need to prove this to other people. And I would just like to say one short thing, like, you know, imagine just how peaceful and harmonious the world would be, how much more peaceful and harmonious the world would be if people did not have this desire to prove that they're right all the time, and could just respect other people's viewpoints. Like, and I think that's one of the great things about this monastery is you do have, in some regards, a diverse set of opinions on certain matters. And, you know, it's great that everybody is, you know, living in this community. And I think that, it's pretty interesting to see how we all, you know, somehow make it work. And we all, you know, are able to live together. And we have, you know, different opinions. You know, some of us may have similar opinions to other people here, but even then, you know, we would still probably have some different beliefs on certain matters. And it's interesting to see how we all kind of live together in this community with our different beliefs and on certain things. And just imagine, yeah, how harmonious the world would be if there were, if people just, you know, knew how to respect other people's viewpoints. Just understand, like, A, not everybody is like me or has the same opinions as me. And that's okay, you know, as long as we're not fighting each other and killing each other. You know, that's all that really matters, essentially. So,
good from America.
Avsarai Bante, thank you very much for the contribution of Lokuham Duro as well as other senior monks. When I was listening to it, what came to my mind was that mindfulness is having a great impact on the world, because when there is an opposition, you will not look down on it. For that, the observation and non-reactional mentality approach is required. So therefore, I feel one who is mindful will be able to develop such a mentality. So there is a great contribution from mindfulness to change our attitude, the way we behave verbally, physically, and as well as mentally. And having said that, that does not mean you just say yes sir, three bags full for everything. But when you have something good to be mentioned, you mention it. And if from the other side there is a huge resistance, because of mindfulness, you still will have the ability not to get yourself annoyed and conclude the discussion without going into hot water, falling into hot water. So that is something that came to my mind. I just want to forward it to the audience for discussion.
Just wanted to thank you, everyone. I just wanted to say one more thing too, that right speech is definitely a skill. You know, it definitely takes a lot of wisdom and effort to be able to practice right speech efficiently. And you know, it's always good if you're in a discussion to know when to say something and how to say it, and, you know, to use the right words. And one of the things that I have noticed throughout my life that people really, really pick up on is how you are approaching them with whatever comments you have, or, you know, if you're in a discussion, say, with somebody with different beliefs, how you're speaking to them about it. And, you know, are you, people, you know, I have found in my life over the years that people can be extremely perceptive, and they can just pick up on, you know, what's your intention, what's your motive for saying this to me. And, you know, if you say the right words and you say it at the right time and in the right way, and it's coming from a place of compassion rather than from a place of ill will, then a lot of the time you'll see that people actually put their, you know, guard down and are actually receptive to what you have to say. I mean, not always, but more often than if you did not do those things. So a lot more often. So right speech is definitely a skill. And not too many people in the world know how to practice right speech. And that is why we have these extreme arguments. You could say those where you see people arguing a lot, you know, over their different beliefs and how they think the world should be and this and that and what everyone should believe in. It comes from a lack of wisdom and a lack of understanding on how to practice right speech. And but you definitely, when you do practice right speech and you do have wisdom in regards to how to speak to people, you do see the extremely positive effects of that, of practicing right speech and of having wisdom in regards to how to speak to people. So thank you, everyone, and that is my comment.
Yes, we are proceeding. Buddha number 12, you may proceed, please.
So continuing the Buddha's answer to this question, but why do they assert diverse truths? Those proponents who claim to be skilled, are those truths actually many and diverse, or do they follow a line of reasoning? The Buddha continues with the answer. Those who assert a teaching different from this to be defective have failed to reach purity. Thus the sectarians speak in separate ways, for they are attached to their own views. Here only is purity, they assert. They say there is no purification in other teachings. Thus too the sectarians, separately entrenched, firmly assert their own way. Asserting firmly his own way, what opponent here could one consider a fool? He himself would just provoke strife by calling his opponents a fool of impure character. Based on a judgment, taking himself as the measure, he enters upon further disputes in the world. Having abandoned all judgments, a person does not create strife in the world. So, again, the Buddha really holds it to the last sentence to kind of bring together his having abandoned all judgments, a person does not create strife in the world. So it's this skewer that is running through this judging others, judging the argument, asserting one's own view as superior to another's, pointing out that somebody is a fool, and it's as they say, tackling the person, not the ball, or tackling the person, not the argument. And it's this judgment that we have to be careful of. Having abandoned all judgment, a person does not create strife in the world. That these argumentations and debating and different kind of arguments, I suppose, is just reflections of judgment. Whereas in fact, if we can see the different perspectives of the other parties, then our wisdom is enriched. Even if it is a kind of a wrong view, well, at least we know the wrong view rather than arguing with it. So those who assert a teaching different from this to be defective have failed to reach purity. Just because you can see the defect in an argument doesn't mean that you have come to truth. One has failed to reach purity. Thus the sectarians speak in separate ways, for they are attached to their own views. So it's this attachment to views, this clinging and craving to views. So we talk about suffering, and then the cause of suffering being craving. Well, we can really crave views, and the big thesis of the Sutta Nipata is the role of views as well as clinging itself as a main downfall of suffering. So here only is purity, they assert. They say there is no purification in other teachings. Thus too the sectarians, separately entrenched, firmly assert their own way. So we fail to see the good in others. We fail to see the good in their arguments, or we fail to see their perspective. And even if it isn't the ultimate answer, we fail to be informed by their perspective. So like that's something I personally enjoy very much, is I really actively try to see both sides. So if I don't really spend much time reading newspapers, but I scan newspapers. I'll scan the headlines, and I make a deliberate practice of scanning left, right, and center media. So I will read Fox News, and I will read the BBC, and I will read, you know, some left-leaning news on purpose, so that I see the different perspectives on the same news item. So somebody will say the Queen is dead, it's a good thing. Somebody will say the Queen is dead, it's a bad thing. Somebody will say, I'm so glad we don't have a Queen, you know, we're over this monarchy thing. Somebody else will say, it's wonderful to have a monarch. They're a great symbol or something like that. So it informs me of looking at the same thing from different perspectives. And nobody's right. It's not right to have a queen, and it's not right to not have a queen. But we can just vipassana means to see things from.
As well as not to have media,
huh?
Not to have CNN, not to have BBC, not to have Al Jazeera, and they are also just like queen.
Yeah, but sometimes we need to understand what's bothering other people.
Like, yeah,
why are they being upset?
That is about Queen, not about the Jazeera, not about the BBC.
A lot of it is about looking at media and how to read media in a way that you come away actually informed, rather than like partisan or you know, you actually are informed by the different arguments. You vipassana means to see things from a multifolded way, in an astonishing way.
Excuse me, David Icke was working in BBC. One day they want to have an opinion poll about the Queen's mother, Mary or something like that. And she passed away, 100th anniversary. So no one knows there's a Queen, Mary. And ultimately he came and reported to the reporter, the editor. He told that even 5% don't care. Then he says, take the 5% 100 and make a news item. You just twist the truth. And then tell something. Everyone is so upset and so happy or concerned about Mary and kind of thing. I can't remember the mother's name. And he says that is what BBC. He resigned. Ultimately, he's been penalized not to give a school for his children. That's the way it is happening. And he's talking about how the media is just like Queen. And the present Queen, his father died the day I was born. And her coronation was on 52, if I am correct. My mother told, the mother was preparing to go to see the Queen. But halfway the sea, while she was sailing, a message came. Father died, she came back. And that is the day I was born. So maybe the Queen's father. So therefore there's some relationship with me, because she has reigned 70 odd number of years. I am also just like father. So that I don't like blaming anyone Queen, because it is almost related to my birth. Don't talk about the Queen.
I'm glad it's all about you. I'm glad it's all about you in the end.
Don't talk about the Queen. Talk any other subject.
So asserting firmly his own way, what opponent could one consider a fool?
One more point also before going to that Dhammarakkhita mentioned about the power of mindfulness, and that the way mindfulness was taught to me, just to have choiceless awareness. And that was the main idea I got, Ken Wilber's idea. And later on I came to know it's a coined word, and it is found in the No Boundary. And I was reading the book, soon I left my job. And I was traveling to Colombo, and I was reading the book, it was so inspiring. But many of the Westerners, they don't like Ken Wilber. And then your idea about that the sharing. Everyone is having some idea, so sharing, we have sharing. So that's exactly we, I felt it's 1977, 78, 79, 80. And that is what the Veluvana Dhamma group is. Lot of big shots, simple living, high thinking, and they come and contribute. But later I found that idea of that meaning of mindfulness is not in Pali Canon. The choiceless awareness and the evilly suspended attention and non-judgmental, non-reaction, it is not in the Pali Canon. So Sri Lankan monk wrote completely against me, telling Bhante, the mindfulness you are talking about is a borrowed one. It is not the mindfulness of what the Buddha taught. Then I told Venerable Dhammika last time, Bhante, please rescue me, bail out me, because I am still teach mindfulness as the choiceless awareness. His idea also correct, your idea also correct, mine also correct. Don't have a choice. Have observation, no conclusion, no inference. More observation or less inference. Just like owl, O-W-L, owl, big eyes, and the wise mind. And he never speak. He's just affirming. That's what the content was. At the beginning, it was so, the allergic for me. It's so neutral. Because I was a person black and white at that time. So I tried my best to provoke Godwin. I throw one or two times. His cat came out of the bag. And I don't like that. Now I am becoming 70, slowly inclining to that kind of a thing. I know everyone knows what I have to teach. And the other one you mentioned, America, that everyone can understand when you are talking. The sentiment, the meaning. You are malice, or you are with the harsh, or you are doing something with the compassionate mind. Others can understand by speech as well as doing. So when I am working with children, I irritate them to the maximum in front of the parents, in front of the teachers, and they are so angry, but ultimately they come to me. But their parents don't give that kind of a treatment. And cancer patient, I just say, you bloody fellow going to die 2 days' time. What meditation for you? So happy. When I say blind people, you blind idiot. Don't look at you, turning the backside to the people. Turn other way around. Give a clap because he don't know how to walk. And they are laughing. I told her, she is talking a very beautiful song about the scenes. Then I told her, you are lying. You can't see. How can you sing like that? No, Bhante, still we have aesthetic ideas. And when you are directly dealing with them, I mean, they appear like very harsh. But that is what the Bhante mindfulness. So when the children climbing, they fall down and crack. I was so happy. I never give treatments. I said, and last time one very beautiful, very cute, fallen down, crying. This time she came with a different costume 1 week after, and she, elder sister came and told, my sister is ready to sing. I told, why not? Come and sing. I can't recognize. You are the girl fallen down, isn't it? Yes. Where's the wound? I can't remember the left leg or right leg. They are so happy to climb trees and all the kind of thing. Parents don't give that. So, but they feel what is the idea behind when we are talking and doing games and kind of thing. I mean, we consider someone as enemy and someone as a friend. But it's a role play. It's a role play. Even the cancer patients, even the prisoners, even the drug addicted people, the Venerable Sagar, when you go there, I also had the alcohol with my father, and we were fighting. You are nothing special. What do you have special? No. And the communication start. Because other people trying to appear like a saints, there's a distance. But when you go to them, and when you are talking, this Bhante is a human. He's a human. He is not going to preach. He's going to give blessings. He says, I am lucky because you are caught up and you are in the prison. And I am a teacher. I am coming. I am not caught up because I am a utter culprit. I utter the sharp fellow, shrewd fellow, doing the same mistake, not caught up. Even the police is happy to say like that. Even the jail guards are telling, but they're exactly the same. They caught up. But we are not. But we are the same. And today only I found that not any ascetic is inferior. Everyone is like that. So that happened for the children, for the cancer patients and the drug addicts and the prisoners. It's very clear. When you are directly talking, they recognize immediately, and mindfulness is the medium. They become so mindful. That is some kind of a thing I learned after the Satipatthana. Earlier, I used to appear to be tried myself to be a saint. Everyone knows I am a culprit. That is a different issue. But I appear to be as a saint because just role model, just like a role play. Still, I have a certain amount of role play. I can't help get out of that. I ask everyone, you with my worship, please, if there is such a contradiction happens, don't take time immediately. Please, please, please. That's all we have to do. I also try my best to express myself because I can't keep it in my mind. And if I am wrong, and after the 3 months of rainy retreat, what are we going to do? Pavarana. What else? Dittenava, Sutenava, Parisankayava, Vadantu Bangayasmantu, Vasantu, Vatikarisha. If you happen to see or hear or guess, please. Then Upanishadsaya say this is the highest Buddhist culture. You give your co-practitioner, please. And if he's having mistake, if he's not telling, it's still good. I mean, he appreciates the peace. He appreciates the harmony. Small mistakes are there, but not to disturb. Occasionally, I have seen some people have stopped that pavarana tapana. You can't do pavarana. I have seen this and mistakes. Then pavarana has to be stopped. That case has to be taken. Others are not taking the case because they know they are trivial things. We have to finish the session. So sharing your mistake, I am hiding. There is a mutual understanding. That is the way I think family affairs must be handled. But I have never seen such families. They are always fighting fault with others. So we monks fighting. Next day we all together go to the Pindapatha, sitting in the same dining hall and eating the same meal. Next day finished. What a nice thing. No ascetic is inferior. Remember evening time, not only the morning time. Always fighting with me. Then there is no fool among ascetics. Sudhamandro, remember. Yes.
Thank you, Mahathero, for your comments, and thank you, Mahasangha, for all the contributions. I think this is one of those kind of suttas that shows the beauty of the, in particular, the Buddha's teachings and the way that he found his group of samanas and the way that he wanted them to live. Because there really is this feeling of knowing that whatever kind of quarrels and disputes and views that we get drawn into and attached to, none of them are the actual truth that we are seeking. And so we know that those who have gotten to that truth, who have realized that ending of suffering, they don't even attach with their own views. And so they don't usually get into the same kind of debates, and they're also much more open to changing their views if they come across new information that seems more correct. And I think that's part of the great benefits of being a samana, of having this shaved head and these robes, and we all do the same thing and we look the same. And at the same time, we're so different from the rest of the world that we can really just stay out of the kind of passion-driven arguments based on these views. So we can be much more kind of nonpartisan that way. And we're much more open and willing to change our views if they seem kind of correct and in line with the Buddha's teachings. But even then within the Sangha, of course, we still have our own arguments and problems, but it's nothing like on the level of the world. So it's very good to have this example, I think.
Sadhu, sadhu. You are the youngest. Be careful. Siddhanta, we can go. We have time.
Yes. Yeah. No, I just want to contribute something. We are talking about views here, and the main difference in Buddha's teaching compared to other teaching is he has allowed the verification of whatever view you have. So as a result, it is not necessary for us to cling on to whatever the view we have. We have the opportunity to go from faith to see whether our faith is something we can actually experience and get rid of the faith itself. So in that regard, Blessed One inviting everybody to come and see his teaching. Therefore, he says it's purification of all beings without any classification or discrimination of beings. If you can understand or receive this teaching, I have the recycle plant to purify you. I just want to add that to the discussion.
So teaching of Buddha is the best, even though he is not carrying any stereotype idea. He is pervading.
I would like to add one more thing, Sangha, if I may. I do think that some of the most important views for us to keep in mind are just the basic right views of Kamma Vipaka, rebirth, and the Four Noble Truths, because if we get too loose in our views, then I think even the sasana itself will fall. So at least we need to keep that together. And I've seen or heard of many Buddhists kind of sort of questioning even those things, and then it kind of stops being the Buddha's teachings. So as long as we keep those views at the very least in mind, then we can keep going.
Yeah, thank you, Mahasangha, for all of your comments. Interestingly enough, I don't want to say that this is a hot debate in the West, but it has been more of a growing discussion, I would say, in Western Buddhist circles, in Western countries. We all know that the Buddhist teachings, at least I can speak from being from the United States, in the U.S., the Buddhist teachings mainly spread through lay people who had kind of, gone to Asia and either temporarily ordained there or had come into contact with monks in Asia and then had brought the teachings back to the West. So for a while now, the Buddhist teachings were spreading in the West, or at least I'm specifically talking about my country, the United States, through lay people and lay groups. And I myself, as a lay person, was involved, with monks, but also in a very good lay group at a Sri Lankan temple in Washington, D.C., my hometown. But it was all lay people, essentially, that group. But in recent times, there's been more of a discussion of where are the monastics, in spreading the Buddhist teachings in the U.S. And that's kind of been a discussion that many people I have seen, at least specifically in the U.S., from what I can tell, is the discussion has been revolving around, for so many years we've had the Dhamma spreading through lay people, but now we need monastics. And I know a couple of monastics in particular, I think it was about two, but one specifically, from what I remember, who is a friend of mine, and he's a monk in Los Angeles. He lives at a Sri Lankan temple in Los Angeles, and he was like talking, from what I can remember, he was once talking about the need for monastics to help spread the Dhamma. So just building off of what Bhante Sudhira was saying, we want to have some, we don't want to lose the right view at the same time. And, just in relation to what I'm saying here, the Sangha is still very important for the Sasana to thrive and spread and live on. And, also Sila is important. I've seen that in a lot of Western circles, sometimes Sila gets kind of left out. the teachings, the focus is on meditation without the sila. You need the sila for the meditation. And so it's important that we still maintain the right view. We don't, as Bhante was saying, we don't throw away the right view at the same time.
Avasarai Mahasangha, just want to add to the discussion one more point. According to the teaching of the Buddha, so far as I know, the right view is knowing that you have a wrong view, and having a right view in itself is a right view. So it's not that you completely abandon the wrong view. You know that you have a wrong view. That itself is the right view.
So regarding the Western Buddhism, Upandita Sayadaw says there's no sasana in the West because no monks and teachings. But Maharishi Sayadaw says, as a layperson, you can gain a lot in vipassana rather than as a monk because so much of rules for the monks. Living in the West and going Pindapatha and begging and living in someone's place and small hut is not according to the American constitution or Western constitution. So therefore, lay people are much facilitated in the sense for vipassana. So he treatises, he says, the first one is very diversified. He says lay people are much advantageous. But in Sri Lanka or in the forest monasteries, we can take the advantage of the being a monk because people are taking care about that and we are minding our own business and doing mindfulness. But the communication, very difficult because we Western people need Western, the lay experience to talk with. And as you mentioned, some Westerners, they are very happy to see monasteries. They are happy to see real masters, those who are living up to. So Pali Tech Society completely translated the Tripitaka was done by lay people. When Bhikkhu Bodhi and Jnanamoli and Jeff, they came into writing, people were very happy. Because they are in water. They are teaching swimming. But early people was not. But many knows the page of the Pali Tech Society book. Because it's well documented and well organized. And I also read it. Because very easy to communicate. Because it is well organized. Standardized. But the monks, different views. So that is also very nice.
Thank you, Bhantes. I would also like to build on what Ayasma Sumana was saying, particularly in the West. Some thoughts that I've shared with other monks over the past few years. One criticism that I've heard a lot is how the general culture of just going straight for the meditation without kind of establishing oneself in virtue. I can see just as being a monk, the difference that having the sila has made, because when you reflect on how long it's been since you've killed anything, since you've stolen anything, since you've kind of misconducted yourself sensually, lied, or taken any drink or drugs, like that alone can just be a source of joy that really uplifts the mind and it helps the meditation a lot. It brings clarity. It brings a sense of, I'm doing the right thing here. And what I've heard, I haven't had enough experience myself, but what I've heard is that many kind of retreat centers and things, the people will go there retreat after retreat, but then as soon as they're off, then they're back to breaking their precepts, and they can't even keep those. And so that's, I think, one big benefit of having monastics around is that they're just a refuge of virtue. And as the Buddha said, the Patimokkha rules are like the string that keeps the flowers well strung together. And I think that's both an internal and an external thing. One, it keeps the tradition, it keeps the lineage, it keeps the sangha together. But also even within ourselves, all that scatteredness, all the different flowers and petals that we want to keep together, it's our virtue and our precepts that can kind of collect it all and keep it beautifully well strung so that the wind doesn't blow it all away. And so I think examples in history of the sasana being spread successfully are usually almost always done by highly attained monastic groups, like Venerable Mahinda with his associates and his sister. and the different kind of missions from King Asoka. And so even if the teachings are in the West, it's still not completely strong yet, I think. And so some kind of cool ideas that myself and other monks had was that basically all Buddhists in the world should go back to the Buddhist countries, have ourselves practice so hard that we all become arahants, and then we spread out again. Because right now, spreading without the arahants, it's so weak, and the state of the world, we just don't know how long it will last anyways. But let's see what happens, I suppose.
So in agriculture terminology, we can do grafting and budding in the West, not transplanting. The plant leaf can't live. They have to find the rootstock from the West, and grafting and budding some buds. So that kind of hybrid we can do.
Well, I'll just give a different perspective and just say I'm not sure. You know, the exact circumstances or the conditions for the arising of the teaching or the preservation of the teaching or the flourishing of the teaching are quite complicated, like our deep karma. I mean, if you go to India, it's in some ways like the obvious signs of Buddhism are kind of gone. But like in my own dealings with, say, Brahmins or people in India, a lot of the Buddhist teachings are have been absorbed into society and into culture so much. You it's very hard to separate out Buddhism from modern day Hinduism or historical Brahmanism. Or if you read the teachings of the Buddha himself, he was hugely influenced by the society of the time and the lineages of teachings that were happening in that time. So the exact conditions in which the sasana will flourish, if for instance, we have a bar that everybody should be enlightened, well, you know, you can say you go to an Asian monastery, then people should be enlightened, or, you know, and that's not how it is. It's sometimes very ordinary people making an extraordinary effort. And, you know, hopefully we have this opportunity to teach in the West or to live in the West if depending on conditions, and just being very open to what might be suitable is a good thing, I think, you know, not to be have that uncertainty. I'm not sure. And that's why we go and we stay at least 3 days or 7 days in a place before we determine that it's a suitable place or not. Like, one can never really know. You can, like, I'm often very surprised at where I get a good reception, and I'm often equally surprised where I don't get a good reception. And that's just been my personal experience. And if we set these ideas of perfect, you know, sort of conditions are perfect, everything else, then it's a great suffering because it will invariably, you know, it's just a concept, it's just a view, whereas the direct experience can be quite different. And, you know, so it's that patience within oneself, that conflict within oneself, that, like, the whole range of arguments. Whenever I hear somebody who has an argument and it really stirs me up, then, oh, that's very interesting. You know, that's interesting inside myself. And I didn't know I felt that way about what I was hearing or what I was experiencing. And then I'll think very carefully over it, like not just think, but really reflect very carefully and try to bring it to peace very, very carefully so that I kind of really digest that experience of what that other person was saying and like why that was stirring me up so much and what does that have to say about myself? Not about the other person or their argument or anything like that. It's that internal experience, like, oh, why was that so provocative to me? Why did I care so much about that point? You know, what was it about the way that person said or did something that was so barbed for me and I got excited or upset about it? Like, it's informing me, you know. I'm not saying that we should find the most difficult people to be around. In fact, sometimes we have to keep away from difficult people, difficult situations. But on the other hand, it's not like we all will see the world differently. And, you know, it's good to be around that. It's good to be slightly stirred up or otherwise it gets too stagnant. and we're all singing the same song, and nobody is thinking at all. Okay.
Yeah, now it is time up. That is why bare attention is bridging West and the East. Bare attention is just mere mindfulness. We are bridging each other. No monks, no ascetics, but no arahant. But still we can do. That is why I appreciate Venerable Jnanaponika from a German. And he introduced this bare attention. Bhikkhu Bodhi refused it. But still it is practicing. So I am thanks to all the participants. And just be mindful and mind your own business. Thank you.